Statewide satellite distribution of this program is made possible by the Lawrence Group, providing residents throughout New York State with total insurance coverage.
This program is a production of WAMC News. From Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly half-hour review of New York State government and politics. Your host is political scientist and syndicated columnist Dr. Alan Chartok of the State University.
Hello and welcome to the Legislative Gazette. This week on the Gazette, we have some beginnings and some endings. The legislative session began with the governor's annual State of the State message. We'll hear about that and we'll report on the end of a national competition for something called Semitech. History was made in upstate New York, where a local politician broke the Republican stronghold in his town. We'll have that story and we'll look at quota systems for high school graduates. All this and more, it's coming up on this week's Legislative Gazette. The 1988 legislative session officially began with Governor Cuomo's annual State of the State message. There was much applause and many, many comments about the speech. Paul Rosenthal has this report.
Governor Cuomo offered his State of the State message this week, and in his address, the governor covered many topics, one of which was his call for the next 10 years to be devoted to the state's children.
The problem of our children demands a bold and broad commitment of government at all levels, in partnership with the whole community. And the message before you calls on us all to make that commitment to our children, not just for this year, not just until the next election. The message calls upon you to make the next 10 years the decade of the child in the state of New York.
To accomplish this, the governor proposes items including better health insurance coverage, a strengthening of efforts to halt teenage pregnancy, more funding to prevent drug and alcohol abuse, and a broad commitment to education towards the 21st century. Cuomo also continued his efforts to keep nuclear power off of Long Island. Referring to the controversial Shoreham nuclear power plant, Cuomo said that energy can be brought safely to Long Island.
On Long Island, I will pursue vigorously the transition to public power. I do this to provide reliable, affordable electricity to ratepayers on Long Island, doing it safely without endangering the lives of millions. Shoreham must not be allowed to open, and we won't let it open.
Governor Cuomo said that Niagara Hydropower will remain upstate. Downstate, a new contract with Hydro-Quebec will provide up to 1,000 megawatts of power for downstaters, the equivalent of another Niagara Falls. Senate Republicans have proposed giving localities up to $3 billion in state aid to help them close landfills and set up recycling and trash burning centers. But Governor Cuomo says that legislators should resist the politically popular urge to throw money at the problem.
The disposal of solid waste has become an urgent concern, and we will deal with it this session. First, we must resist the inclination to settle for quick fixes that would end up making things worse. Second, I believe we must resist the politically popular temptation simply to throw more money at this problem. Some have proposed, as I understand it, an answer that would turn over the local governments as much as $3 billion of state taxpayer money. That would make us popular with local government officials. It would also mean a huge tax increase for state taxpayers. I reject that answer.
Cuomo said he will ask the legislature to let the state establish a waste exchange program for state agencies, municipalities, and regional recycling agencies. The aim is to develop markets for recycled materials in the state and ensure that there will be outlets for recycled materials. One of those Senate Republicans is Joseph Bruno of Troy, who has kept a close eye on the waste management issue for quite some time. He offered his reaction to the governor's comments on the issue.
Well, I'm happy to see that the governor recognizes the validity of the proposals put forth by the Senate Republicans on solid waste management, especially those pertaining to the need for regulatory reform on the state level and the development of markets for secondary materials. Many of the governor's proposals in solid waste management have already been adopted by the state Senate. finally, the regulatory limbo facing municipalities, which the governor refers to in his text, is a primary cause of today's solid waste crisis.
Assembly Speaker Mel Miller also commented on the governor's address. He said he was pleased with it, but contends that not much new was talked about at all, except for one proposal.
I think the real new one I thought was the one dealing with a guaranteed space in college and a guaranteed support for kids who are, I think it's 125% of poverty level in the main speech, not in the speech he gave out today. That was new. That was a new proposal. And then you have variations on old proposals. But you know, I've been here, this is my 18th year. There is nothing new. Go into the legislative index, you'll find every program that's ever been thought of in the last 200 years. But there were new twists and new angles to programs. But as I said, I'm very happy with the State of the State message. I think it's very reflective of my conference, and I think if you'll talk to the members of my conference, you'll find generally my conference is, it will be very supportive of most of the programs. The real question is, how much is the government going to attach to carry out these programs in the year everybody believes we may have some real financial problems? I think that becomes the real issue.
Assembly Speaker Mel Miller. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Paul Rosenthal.
A victory so nice, they celebrated twice. A new Democratic official in one New York town was sworn in this past week in two different ceremonies. It was the Democrats' way of celebrating their first victory in the town's 200-year history. Maury Small has this report.
Bob Burns was sworn in Monday night as a town board member, along with the other newly elected officials in Bethlehem, an Albany suburb of more than 25,000. What was unusual was that he had already been sworn in the night before in an unprecedented ceremony arranged by the town Democratic Committee to celebrate an unprecedented election victory. Burns is the first Democrat ever elected in Bethlehem's 194-year history. He defeated a Republican opponent by only 5 votes, a true squeaker that provoked a legal challenge by the Republicans and ballot recounts that dragged on for a month after the November elections. Burns' victory could be termed a lesson in how to defeat the odds with sheer shoe-leather campaigning, or a portrait of one man's reverence for the American two-party system. Mild-mannered and soft-spoken are words suited to the 36-year-old Burns, a widower, father of two, and deputy director of the Albany County Probation Department. He's certainly not what you think of as the typical politician, and indeed he says he never harbored any particular desire to run for office. So why did he? Because as the election neared, it looked like the Republicans were going to run completely unopposed for the 5 town board seats.
Growing up in Albany, I used to think how embarrassing it was for the Republicans. They never put up candidates, at least in the area where I grew up. And I was just disturbed by that thought, that in the United States, you know, you walk into a voting booth and there's candidates all on one side and no opportunity, no alternative. So that's really how it started, and then I just tried as hard as I could. I got as many friends and supporters together as I could.
So Burns joined the fray just 6 weeks before Election Day. How did he win? Well, he says refrigerator magnets helped. Burns figured everyone in Bethlehem has a refrigerator and presumably something to attach to the door of it. So Bob Burns' refrigerator magnets became part of his campaign packet. Burns also borrowed a tactic from the Rainbow Coalition, one you might not think necessary in a well-to-do suburb like Bethlehem.
What I did very often is during the campaign is if I heard of someone who had not registered, I would always have my supply of registration forms and absentee ballot forms, and I gave out a large number of the forms. I have no idea how those people enrolled or whether those people voted, and if they voted, whether they voted for me or not. But
even if only 5 of those people did vote for Burns, that's what won him the election. There was, of course, a political climate in Bethlehem that helped Burns win. The Bethlehem Town Board had come under stiff criticism from a new citizens group demanding better town planning and restraints on development, a familiar issue in many New York towns. Critics said the town board was letting developers run roughshod, building new subdivisions that would crowd the town's streets and schools without any official assessment of the impact. Conflict of interest also reared its head.
I saw a close affiliation, and that disturbed me, and I mentioned it during the the campaign. There were fairly sizable political donations to the Republican Party from developers, many of them outside of the area, developers who have no connection with the town of Bethlehem other than the fact that they wish to build in our town. That disturbed me. I didn't know with any entrenched one-party system, you just don't know why those donations were being made. There were some potential conflicts of interest with town employees also seeking to develop land in the town and in some questionable areas of the town.
Burns is calling for a resurrection of the town's Board of Ethics. It's a panel that exists on paper but has never had anyone appointed to it. He also wants a town master plan that would be required reading for any prospective developers. Is Bob Burns a citizen turning into a politician?
God, I hope not. I've already been told that I'm starting to talk too long. I hope that doesn't occur. I don't feel like a politician. I still talk about politicians as if they are someone else.
But as any official from a minority party knows, Burns is going to have to play some politics to make himself heard as the only Democrat on a 5-member town board and the very first town Democratic official in almost 2 centuries. From the little town of Bethlehem, this is Maury Small for the Legislative Gazette.
Last year, the state legislature passed a law which creates a new formula for handing out Regents scholarships to high school boys and girls. But a Republican legislator is saying that that formula is too complicated. Bruce Robertson has this story.
The law which was passed last year established a new set of guidelines for giving high school boys and girls Regents and Empire State scholarships. Instead of evaluating academic performance by SAT scores alone, because these tests are thought to be biased against women, the legislator said the new formula will look at SAT scores and students' academic records. But Assemblyman John Faso, a freshman Republican from Columbia County, says this process is too complicated.
But high school academic performance has not been shown to be comparable from high school to high school. You simply can't develop a standard whereby the A you might have received in one high school might be determined to be equal to the 95 or the 85 that you might have received at another high school. All high schools have different degrees of academic difficulty, some type of different standards, and individual teachers may indeed have differing grading standards within the same high school. So it's very difficult to develop a fair and equitable means of using the performance and the actual grade that a high school student received, and then compare it to a grade which another student received in another part of the state.
Faso is calling for the repeal of that law, which would affect the 1989 graduating class. He says a good alternative to such a cumbersome process would be to set up a quota system.
I am simply suggesting that rather than perpetuate this foolishness for this school year and making every graduating senior in the class of 1989, in effect, a guinea pig for this experiment. If they want to have a greater proportion of girls receiving the awards, well, simply make it on a numeric basis. There's no other fair way to do it. And it's unfortunate that we've come to this, but the proposal that has been adopted and that the Education Department is trying to implement now is going to cause more dislocation and greater confusion than it's going to solve.
Asked if he supports quotas, Faso says no, but if the legislature must put restrictions on the awards, he says they should put ones on that will work. Faso also says he doesn't think SAT tests are gender biased. But not everyone agrees with the quota solution, including Governor Cuomo.
The Republican suggestion is that you just cut the admissions in half and make it half women, half men, regardless of the evidence of merit from the SAT. Well, that's interesting. If you're going to say half men and half women, regardless of merit, what do you say to Jewish people who say there aren't enough of us in the scientific colleges, or Italians, or blacks, or Hispanics? What do you do? For years, a lot of people have been saying to minorities, you can't have a quota system. As a matter of fact, the Supreme Court has said that it's unconstitutional in some circumstances to say we're going to do it arbitrarily. Merit doesn't count. Half black, half white. It's a very interesting proposition. My personal view is, like yours, opposed to the notion of artificially saying it must be this kind or that kind without respect to quality, capacity, etc. I wouldn't want to make a court of appeals that way. I wouldn't want to make a government that way. And I don't believe I'd want to admit kids to school that way. Must be half men, must be half women. Even if all the women are smarter and better and more deserving than all the men, 50% of those more deserving women cannot make it because I'm going to insist on men. I think that kind of artificial judgment is dangerous, and I'm fascinated that the Republicans have now adopted this position.
New York Governor Mario Cuomo. This argument will not end here. The 1988 legislative session officially began, and as education is one of the governor's priorities, it's a sure bet this debate will come up again. For the Legislative Gazette, this is Bruce Robertson.
New York and Massachusetts were left in the dust this week as a final decision for a company called Semitech was announced. Semitech's new home is now in Austin, Texas. Brenda McMahon has more details.
Semitech stands for Semiconductor Manufacturing Technology, and it's a consortium of semiconductor businesses joining together to develop an expansive national research and development center. Semitech is expected to generate some 800 jobs and lead the nation in semiconductor research. New York's proposed site for Semitech was in Rensselaer Technology Park in North Greenbush. The state was going to work cooperatively with Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute, using their high technology expertise for the project. Harold Holzer, spokesman for the state's Office of Economic Development, says New York is very disappointed about the final decision.
New York is disappointed, but we're also pleased that our own high-tech investments across the state are maturing rapidly and beginning to generate jobs. We're still convinced that New York is the most hospitable climate in the nation for high-tech investment. So we'll continue to mine our own resources here and also continue entering these kinds of national competitions. It's worth our effort. We'll win some and we'll lose others, I guess.
Holzer says New York may have lost this competition, but it's well-equipped to compete for any future projects.
We have a science and technology foundation that specifically invests resources and loans money to stimulate high-tech investment. We have a ceramics corridor, we have robotonics, we're connected with universities for research and job generation all across the state through the supercomputer at Cornell. We just invested in a new biotech laboratory in Columbia down here in Manhattan. So we are not just competing, you know, we're not just sitting by and entering the Olympics. We're also competing, we're also working in New York State.
Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute spokesman Matt McGuire says although this proposal fell through, RPI hopes to work with New York State on future high-tech projects.
What our government officials did for this area in connection with the Semitech effort cannot be underestimated. They really helped a great deal in advancing the message, setting forth the message about the strengths this area has in terms of its technological climate and its business environment. And those are steps that will pay dividends for RPI and for the region in the future. And RPI is really very eager to work with New York State in other ways to be a part of that.
But New York isn't the only one who's disappointed about the Semitech decision. 11 other states, including Massachusetts, were also chosen as finalists and lost to Austin. The Massachusetts proposal would have put Semitech in the Massachusetts Microelectronic Industrial Center in Westboro. David Wood, spokesman for Governor Michael Dukakis, says they're disappointed but happy that Massachusetts made the final cut.
Well, we're obviously disappointed that Semitech didn't choose Massachusetts. We congratulate the people of Texas who have put together a very impressive proposal, one that obviously impressed Semitech to the point where they chose to site in Austin. We feel that Massachusetts did put together a very good proposal. We were in the running up until the very last minute, and that's something that we're proud of here.
Well, the competition is over, and Austin, Texas is the new home for Semitech. We asked Ed Veeder, chairman of Texas's Department of Commerce, how he felt about that decision.
Sheer delight. I think that it's a wise choice, but obviously it's something that Austin is pleased with and the state is pleased with, and we're going to make it a success.
Ed Veeder is the chairman of Texas's Department of Commerce. And so the story goes, Semitech has been sited in Austin, Texas. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Brenda McMahon.
Dave Gilletly talks with Lieutenant Governor Stan Lundeen about the State of the State address. Lundeen explains the governor's proposal to reimburse localities affected by the Super Collider for tax revenues that they would lose by the acquisition of lands.
We have said all along that New York State will do everything possible to minimize the negative impact and to maximize the benefit of locating the superconducting Super Collider near Rochester. Today, in his State of the State address, Governor Cuomo has indicated that we are proposing to reimburse every local government and school district every bit of tax revenue they should lose by the acquisition of property for this project. Overall, these governments will gain substantially almost $500 million in additional taxes during the first 18 years of the operation of the collider, but they will suffer less than $1 million a year loss in taxes while it's being built, and we're saying the state, all the state, will benefit from the SSC locating here. Therefore, the state should pick up that cost and reimburse and make a payment to school districts and municipalities in lieu of taxes, making them whole.
Now, is this really aimed at some of the local governments that have perhaps been in opposition? May this be one of the reasons that they've been in opposition?
I think we're trying to be fair. Whether the local government has resolved to oppose the project or not, we're trying very hard to be fair. We have a committee of the Wayne County Legislature who has resolved to work with us, even though they have taken a position in opposition. They have resolved to work with us, and we intend to do that. And I think that many people in Wayne County are very open, including elected officials, to this kind of cooperation. I think it'll be a major step forward in alleviating the concerns of school board members, county legislators, and town officials. In Monroe County, the greater population in the Rochester area, I think likewise those townships that are directly affected will take some comfort from the fact that we are reaching out and making them whole for any temporary losses they should receive.
One of the other things that's in the message, the 100-page message the governor's delivering, is that he's calling for a state constitutional amendment that would have candidates for governor and lieutenant governor nominated as a team. Obviously, this could affect you in a future term. Why would we want to get the political process, the constitution involved with what is really seemingly a party process?
Well, actually, this is not a constitutional change. We believe that you can elect the governor and lieutenant governor as a team merely by a change in the election laws. We think that experience in New York State in recent years suggests that you want a partnership. You want a governor and a lieutenant governor who can work together. Therefore, they ought to run together in the primary as well as in the general election. That'll make for better government in New York. It isn't really a political question, though it affects the way they're elected. It's a governmental question. In addition to that, we're proposing some constitutional changes regarding the appointment to a vacant office of lieutenant governor should one die or resign. The question of the absence from the state of the governor is archaic, and we propose to change that. We propose to address the inability of the governor to serve. basically making it like the federal constitution, where we can replace a vice president, we can declare the president to be unable to serve, and we can provide for the ongoing functioning of government.
So would this necessarily eliminate a primary for lieutenant governor?
Yes. Our objective is to allow primaries for governor and lieutenant governor together. In other words, going back to the 1982 situation, Governor Cuomo chose Senator Carl McCall as his running mate, and Mayor Koch chose Al Dalbello, the Westchester County executive, as their running mate. Instead of getting a situation where separate primaries elected Cuomo and Dalbello, you would elect them as a team.
Lieutenant Governor Stan Lundeen. A state lawmaker is suing Environmental Conservation Commissioner Thomas Jorling. Brenda McMahon tells us that story.
Senator John McHugh, a Republican from Watertown, New York, says he and farmer Gerald Adams are suing NCON Commissioner Jorling because he illegally extended a pesticide control law. The 1983 law requires some farmers to give 2 days' notification when spraying pesticides near residents. The new extension would include all farmers. McHugh says this law shouldn't apply to agricultural spraying because it's logistically unreasonable and environmentally unsound.
Regrettably, the Department of Environmental Conservation has taken that law and really turned it around and gone contrary to legislative intent and extended the provisions of the bill to agriculture, to open space spraying, which we feel was never intended by the legislature, and which, more importantly, would have a very adverse effect upon agriculture. It would make it much more difficult for farmers to effectively keep pests under control with respect to their crops. It would as well have a very negative effect on the environment. Currently, New York State has a very innovative program known as integrated pest management that has allowed farmers to become very selective with their spraying, has enabled them to reduce the amount of spraying that they conduct. Under these new rules and regulations, although we think they're intended to be environmentally sound, the actual result would be that farmers would be forced to spray more often and to use more insecticides. So we don't feel that it serves either the interests of the farmer or the public health concerns that are obviously associated with pesticides.
But McHugh says the main problem is that Jorling failed to meet special requirements which would have allowed him to extend the original law.
The DEC has, in our judgment, and the claim we are making in the suit, totally failed to meet the requirements of developing rules and regulations as set forth in that State Environmental Quality Review Act. So although the rules and regs have not been formally filed as yet, and DEC is still awaiting to do that, we feel that the law has been so violated that there's no way to rectify the wrongs made to this point.
The senator says he wants the commissioner to go through the correct channels to extend the law, which includes looking at the environmental impact of the change. McHugh wants to be able to voice his opposition and then let the ruling body decide. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Brenda McMahon.
And that's it for this week's Legislative Gazette. The show is produced by Brenda McMahon, and she had help this week from Maury Small, Bruce Robertson, Dave Galletly, and Paul Rosenthal. I hope you enjoyed the show and that you'll tune in again next week to hear about the news, events in and around the Empire State. Until then, I'm Alan Shartok.
The Legislative Gazette is a production of WAMC News. Dr. Alan Shartok is executive producer. This program is made possible with funds provided by the State University College at New Paltz.
Statewide satellite distribution of this program was made possible by the Lawrence Group, providing residents throughout New York State with total insurance coverage.